Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jada Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me always is Nathan. Oh my god, I've had a headache all day. I kind of still have a headache, but you know what will fix that, Nathan?
Alcohol. Scotch. I like scotch. Scotchy scotch scotch.
Let's just hope it cleans it up is what I'm trying to say. You know, sweeps it under the carpet, so to say. And yes, that's a euphemism. What are you drinking, Nathan?
The huge back onto the gin, because I felt, you know, I got home and I was like, you know, I need a lot of gin, so.
Well, it's there good to hear that you're not drinking NyQuil like last week when you should have been podcasting, but hey, were instead napping. Hey,
you know what? It's not my fault that there was a time vortex that sucked the hour we would be podcasting out of existence. It's not my fault.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
The government for that.
That's exactly what it is. Daylight saving time. Daylight saving time
bullshit.
It saves money on power. I got nothing. Oh, my God. It's been a week, dude. I was sick all week, which means I actually got some painting done, which is nice. I am rounding the corner on finishing my Works Raptor, and then I will eagerly be working on Omnidyne. And I even ended up looking through some of my fantasy stuff and kind of being like, yeah, I should really finish this up so that I can sell it. But I didn't get that far even. I was just like, nah, it takes effort. Fuck that. And I just put it away.
I got to the planning phase of selling
it. Right, exactly.
Like finishing it. That's
I was like, you know, if I paint these two things, I could call it quits. And that's kind of where that ended. But
and then you're like, oh, but then I'd have to paint them.
So that was my this week in hobby. What about you, Nathan?
I got a ton done because I have, like I said, I have to finish a fuckload of stuff for Adepticon and next weekend's Dystopian Wars tournament. So, I started work on my Floating Bastions, got them about half done. I finished up all 30 of my Tactical Marines. They are done, deckled, based, and sealed, ready to go for my Iron Hands. I built everything but the two models I don't own for my my.
That just sounds like a cop-out.
Right?
Right? Sure, I don't own them. I guess that means that you haven't assembled them. That just sounds like a cop out.
I know. I got everything built and primed, good to go. So here this week for Saturday, I got to paint my 10 tiny flyers, finish those 3 bastions, get my battle cruiser, my battleship done, and I feel really good about that. I feel really good about not even losing sleep over that. That's how good I feel about it. That's I mean, right?
Yeah, fair.
For Adepticon, I have 2 Dreadnoughts, 3 Razorbacks, a Storm Raven, a Drop Pod, and a Command Squad and Captain. So still feeling good about that as well, because that is 2 weeks after the
But you're on the crunch, though.
I am on the crunch. Listen, I am trying to get 4 army systems finished for 3 different tournaments that all happen in a span of 4 weeks. Because the week after Adepticon is the Firestorm tournament that I'm hoping to get my Terrans done for.
Right.
Totally not going to happen. you know, and I feel really good about finishing 3 of the 4. It's actually Bushido, which, despite me ordering 3 weeks ago, still has not arrived.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that one's starting to worry me, because, you know... Mm-hmm. Despite having me shell out £30 sterling for shipping, because apparently they don't do free shipping when you spend a fuck ton of money, they didn't express ship it, which wasn't even an option. So we'll see if it arrives.
Why give free shipping when you can pocket 30% of that cost?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. All right, so let's get on to the weekly listener poll question from a while ago. The question we had for you guys was, do you feel that the Dwarfs army book needed a monstrous unit option? We'd kind of talked about this a little bit. Nathan and I have been in agreement on this forever. If you listen to the show, you know what our answers were. But 64% of you agreed with us and 35% disagreed. There were some people who felt like it just wasn't necessary in the book. I'm going to go ahead and just read a couple of these comments here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Ian posted, he said, I voted no on principle. I have no idea whether they need one to be competitive with other armies, but monstrous units seem to be generally assigned to some armies, and they don't make sense for the dwarves. Dwarvi. Then he later posted 2 days later, "Arg, okay, I stand by the principle, but I've been thinking about the idea of steam-powered, engineer-created golems. That would have been awesome stuff in the book. I changed my vote."
That's exactly what we said, is we're just like, you know, it's not that they need it, no, because this book good. Can win.
I think it's very competitive, yes.
You know, like not having a presence in the magic phase, it just feels like a cop-out, where it's just like, oh yeah, we could have given you something that's amazing and cool and fluffy and would have been the best-looking models we've ever produced, but then we decided to bet the farm on the Imperial Knight.
Yes. Exactly.
You know, so instead of doing something cool and interesting for dwarves, fuck you.
He says, "I still don't like the emphasis on monstrous stuff in this edition, but I really like the way some 6th edition books allowed completely different armies from the same book, and the golems would have been a really cool and creative way to do that. I yield, and I agree with Nathan or Lang. I have no idea which of you is which."
You know, honestly, our wives make the same mistake,
so
I don't...
It does happen often. I mean, don't let the intro throw you where my voice says I'm Lang, because that's... That is a trick, and it's been 3 years of me just pulling the wool over your babyish, idiotic, innocent eyes, because you can't tell that my name is Nathan. Let's move on here. Andrew posted, he said, "Some form of cavalry would also have helped add variety to the army. I know they've never had monstrous units, but I think they're the only one without them at this point. Without at least one. Heck, why not give them some kind of mechanized cavalry? Oh, wait, that would require an ounce of creativity and giving more than two shits about this army. I guess they're just lucky enough they didn't get wood-elfed into oblivion." Interesting. It's good to see that jaded attitude just carries on to the fan, you know, where it's just like, well, you know, you could have done that, but you'd have to be something other than a raging fucking mongrel piece of shit. Garbage. You're all human garbage. Wood elves. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate your post. Mr. Megatron says, "Needed? No. I voted that based on the strictest adherence to the question. The big models rammed down our throats like so much cock are tiresome and have diluted the flavor of 40K and fantasy." If 40K
now, is
and
that
fantasy
the flavor of cock?
I was going to say, if that wasn't cock to begin with, and how do you dilute that flavor? You know what I mean? You can mask it with a saltier version. All right. And then he goes on, he says, 5 years ago, you could say MCs are a chaos. MCs?
Yeah. Monstrous creatures?
Monstrous creatures. Ah, I got you. There you go. Fucking acronyms. Are a chaos or a nids thing, with chaos having princes and greater demons, but few exceptions, and nids having the ability to field tons of them, and a variety back then when no variety existed. Now, when telling someone about an army, they'll ask, what's their big unit/thing, where monoliths and carnifices? We established that it's called a murder of carnifex.
We did. Like, we have absolutely established that it is a murder of carnifex. This is a long standing.
That's right. That is correct. Now they're not the feature anymore. So, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that, and here's why not. I think that in our childlike minds, in our ambitions, you know, if you go way back to the days when somebody asked you what you wanted to be when you grow up and you say a ninja, you know, like, if you were to give us the opportunity to make this kind of stuff, we're going to go that bigger, better route, right? Like, in the world of sci-fi and fantasy, that has to be an open option in any situation, right? Like, even the wood elves, it's like, oh, okay, well, you can just give them ents, you can give them tree monsters, you can give them all these different things to play with. You don't have to look at something like the dwarves and say, well, you know, the dwarves, they don't have these things, they can build 3,000 foot tall gold statues of themselves and give all their technology to the humans to make steam tanks with, but you know, they don't. You know, like, I think it's very silly to go, hey, these should be the feature, as opposed to saying, like, no, everybody should have some sort of open-door policy to being larger than life, even the dwarves, right? And I think it's kind of silly to say, well, no, dwarves don't get that. They just don't, because it's too much, and, monoliths should stay monoliths.
You know, totally, especially when you consider the fact that they have taken the opportunity to really just, like, go to fucking town with all of the armies, where they're just like, hey, everyone, Empire rides demigryphons now. Hey, it's a thing. We have lots of them.
They exist, so...
You know, orcs and goblins, you know, goblins have these gigantic spiders, bigger than dragons. Hey, it's a thing. Hey, high elves have, you know, what's the plural of phoenix? I honestly don't know.
I believe it is
Phoenixes?
Just, I believe it is just Phoenix.
I'm going to go with Phoenixes.
Phoenixes?
Yes. The High Elves got Phoenixes.
Phoenixes. Multiple Phoenixes.
Phoenixes.
Although one of them isn't fire and it's not technically a Phoenix. So go fuck yourself.
Well, one of them burns.
The other was just a coal bird who I play bass for. Hello, Kentucky. We are Coalbird.
Anyway, they've been adding all of these things to all of the other armies, whether they kind of fit or not, by virtue of, wouldn't this be cool? Because honestly, the Demigryph Knights was one of the things that, like, fucking Forge World released Theodore Buckner, right. And everyone was just like, oh my god, that is the greatest idea in the world, and Games Workshop's just like, dibs.
Right.
Everyone, we're totally stealing this.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the idea of not being able to get something cool like fucking dwarf-built golems.
Wagcast says, miss out a little bit, but it's hard to argue it wouldn't have felt like dwarves if they had the access. The thing that is disappointing is that they have models and rules in place that could have easily been adapted to the dwarf book to give us things like monstrous cavalry. You could have operated the gyros and squadrons using the same rules as the Nurgle plague drones. Actually, that's a really good point. If you wanted to reach a little further into the deep fluff, you could have given us monstrous cavalry units of death rollers from Blood Bowl, where they literally... No idea from Blood Bowl is good. Let's just lay that foundation.
Yeah, go on.
Before I continue reading, I want to lay that foundation. Was it necessary to make the army competitive? No, but it was totally a plausible thing to do, and I think GW missed an opportunity that would have made the book more dynamic and even given them the ability to sell more models that they already
Boom! Sentence fragment. Drop the mic.
Bam. Walk the fuck away. You know, I do think that's very interesting as well. Just almost to say, you know, they've done it everywhere else, you know, like not just from a fluff perspective, but from a rules perspective, they've made it work everywhere else. Not just said, hey, look, this is cavalry with this stat line or this is monstrous cavalry with this stat line. They took something like the plague drones, which they're not necessarily flyers. They're not something that's necessarily working a certain way. You know, they've got the hover rule in place now, which you could have used, you know, very effectively. And you could have just played it that way and it would have been fine. You know, so I think that's actually a really, really good point. I like the idea that, you know, even from a rules perspective, not just should it be there, but like how would they be able to make something like clockwork golems function in the game? It's like, well, there's any number of ways to make that work where they're not just Johnny Monstrous Infantry with a stat line, but they actually work some a little bit differently, which I like. Davey comments about clockwork golems. More people comment about clockwork golems. Everybody loves the idea. They think it would be really cool to get in there. Mr. Malorian voted yes, because even though I love the dwarves and their fluff, there is always room for something new. What happened to the idea of squadrons of gyrocopters? Hell, why not units of shield bearers? Or he says, hell, why units of shield bearers? But I assume he means why not.
Yeah. No, you know, and I think that's the big point is, like, there is always room for something new. Because what did we get that was new with that army book? We got the Ironbreaker gunnery unit that's
right.
Rare, and we got a gyrocopter variant.
That's right.
And you're like, you know what? Out of everything, the fact that that's all they got that was new, you know, it feels
that like... That was my major complaint about the whole book, if you recall, right? Like,
no, it absolutely was, because again... not saying that it's a bad book, because I do love the book. I really do. I feel like it's going to be a strong book.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to see dwarf players altering what they took. Unlike, say, Warriors of Chaos armies, where they're just like, yeah, I just added one Gore Beast chariot. Otherwise, this is my list from before. I feel like it's going to kind of change the way they play. I think that dwarfs are going to have an easier time winning games. We're going to see a lot more combat dwarfs. All of this is very good things. But again, we didn't get those new ideas. Because, you know, even when I said about the... God, I could reach for the army book, but fuck it. The shooty Ironbreakers that sit in the rare choice. I was like, yeah, you just take 10. 10 with a banner. You would literally never take more than that. And that's kind of where it's at. And even then with gyrocopters, gyro bombers, you're like, yeah, maybe.
Right.
Maybe you take it. And it just, that's again, when we go back and we look at all of 8th edition, you're like, but everyone got all these cool things. I mean, like, shit, Beastmen, who were the last 7th ed book, got like Cygors and Gorgons and Jabberslites, and they got all of these monsters.
Well, and again, not even to press you about Warriors of Chaos, but they got access to a lot more monsters as well, and they made other older units more viable, like Demon Princes. You got Manticores now. Mm-hmm. You did get the Carnifex. Don't forget the Carnifex.
Yep,
and it's then an whatever. Option. Never, you'll never take it, but it's an option. It's there with the Slaughterbrute.
Yep.
All right, thanks everyone who voted on this week's listener poll. We will have another question for you again at the end of the show. Of course, if we remember, you can find those at GDGamerCast.com. All right, so let's talk about the model of the week. The model of the week is the Chaos Space Marine Hellbrute model. I think for very obvious reasons. You know what I really liked about this model, and I think made me very, very happy, mm-hmm. was that... Well, and
that is a strong reason.
They didn't go back on the aesthetic choice that they made for the starter kit.
Yeah, you know, the starter kit Hellbrute was gorgeous. I mean, let's be honest. If you were a Chaos Space Marine player, you picked up the starter kit because you wanted cultists, and you wanted that Hellbrute. I mean, the Chosen themselves were very nice. The Lord was very nice.
Yes.
Depending on your list, those were kind of take it or leave it options. But I mean, that Hellbrute was fantastic. And yeah, I agree with you. I love the fact that they decided to keep that. And as you scroll through, you just get to see just how, like, it basically has every weapon option, and they all look great. Like, one of my favorite kits. I think this is the best kit Games Workshop has released in a long fucking time. Like this, I love it.
Did you see the picture on Facebook that somebody posted where they took two of the tentacle arms and put them on each side?
Yeah.
And Darren posted where he's like, this reminds me of Lang's old dreadnought. And I was like, those motherfuckers. That was my idea years ago.
Tales. Years and years ago. Because you had like
saddest dreadnought of all time.
Why? Because it fire frenzied every turn and just
fire frenzied every turn with two combi bolters because it was a dreadnought with two close combat weapons. That's all it was. And it just had like tentacles bursting out the side of each, and that was it. That was all the guns it had. But oh my god, every game. What to do this turn? Turn one, fire frenzy. Turn two, fire frenzy. Anyways.
Except the one time we played where you literally had it completely hidden out of line of sight, and then a blood frenzy ran into the open.
It just rolled through. It was
like, I'm in the open now. And I was like, sweet, I'm going to shoot it with all the dark lances.
And then you failed to destroy it.
Yes, but I did immobilize it. And when you immobilize an all close combat dread, you can pretty much.
But it was funny because then he just got to sit there and I was like, please fire frenzy, please fire frenzy. And he wouldn't fire frenzy for the rest of the game.
times.
Good times. Yes, I think that this is a gorgeous kit. They really did do a wonderful job giving weapon options and just, you know, making it
different head options. I think I count 4 different head options.
Yeah, and I really particularly like just the 2 dreadnought close combat weapon variant that they give you because it's just, it looks big, beefy, and ready for, you know what I mean? Like, it's a well-designed...
Fucking missile launcher arm. Yes. I love it. That is, like, the best missile launcher. Like, you know, and again, I really feel like everything about this kit is just firing. Because you can clearly tell that it was, at one point, a dreadnought. And that's what I kind of love about it is, you know, this model, just like everything out of the starter set, really encapsulates the feeling that... these were once Space Marines, but the warp and the Eye of Terror and whatever else has twisted them. And so you can see what they used to be, but it's clearly not the same. And I think, like I said, it just, it fucking hits it out of the park. I love it. I love the fact that you have all of your different weapon options. I think the only one that I didn't see that I know it can take is a plasma cannon. Oh, no, they have a plasma cannon. Never mind. You're just looking at the barrel. It's the one with the hammer has a plasma cannon. So, yeah, like, it has all of the weapon options. It's big. It looks wider than a normal Dreadnought. Like I said, I love it. I love all the different options that you have. You know, I like how even on the website you can see that they decided to paint everything up. So you've got the Khorne one first, then you have a Tzeentch one, a Nurgle one. And even though there are not specific god parts, you kind of see the way that you can build it in such a way that the Nurgle one, despite not having anything that looks decayed or drippy or, you know, a lot of the typical Nurgle tropes.
Well, they give you the head that's kind of decaying-ish.
Yeah, it's kind of decaying-ish, and they just painted the flesh in, you know, such a way. But I think that's what makes this kit brilliant, is instead of having to slap you over the face and just be like, the skull is for Khorne, and this droopy flesh is for Nurgle, they're able to provide you with a number of options that allow you, when you paint it, to really promote it and push it into that particular scheme. And it's not like Hellbrutes can take Marks of Chaos, because they can't. But the fact that they give you the ability to tie it into any Chaos Marine army you're making, knowing that there are, what, all of the original Traitor Legions, plus the Four Gods, plus, like, it's just like, I can give it any weapon options I want, and I can build it in such a way that it matches any Chaos Marine army I build. Like I said, the kit hits it out of the park.
It's one of those things where you're just like, you have to stop and think, how long has this been coming, right? Like, how long has plastic dreadnoughts been available for Space Marines? You know, the longest time, it was just, well, don't buy the fucking Chaos Space Marine dreadnought. Just buy a Space Marine dreadnought and chaos it up. You know, because it was ridiculous to even try to think of doing anything with what was existing for Chaos at the time. So I like the fact that they really decided, you know what, it needs its own kit. It needs to be its own thing, not just a Space Marine dreadnought with some spikes on it.
Well, especially because the Chaos Rhino, the Chaos Vindicator, the Chaos Land Raider, all of these vehicles were literally the Space Marine version with a spike sprue thrown in.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, so you're just like, talk about phoning it in. You know, talk about half-assing it. And like I said, that's what I think I love most about this is exactly what I said before, where you're like, you can see that it was Space Marines. Mm-hmm. It shares that root aesthetic, but this is clearly something different. Unlike the whole, we added a spiky sprue, just put these spiky helmets on and the spiky front end, and that rhino is chaos, son. And you're like, I guess? In the most half-assed way you could possibly do this?
But again, like, my viewpoint of Space Marine vehicles is well-documented now, so I don't ever touch them. All right, so that's the model of the week. Let's get on to the main topic for today's show. Oh my god, this is happening. Codex Imperial Knights, or Knightus Imperialis, I believe is the founder said, which means a whale's vagina.
Ron Burgundy. You know, like, I can't sigh more. I could not sigh more. So let's get this out of the way first. First of all, this codex is horrifically unnecessary, okay?
Yeah.
No,
it's a fucking joke. Like, it's...
Oh, you know, the fact that this cost me $50 kind of pisses me off a lot. Because what do we have? This codex consists of the freely available White Dwarf rules.
Well, no, start from most important. Start from most important. What does it have in it, most importantly?
I don't know what you're fishing for.
Oh, well, I was just going to say 3 pages.
Well, yes. I mean, like, that's the thing. Is, like, when you look at it, the rules start on page 58. The last page of the codex is page 64. Now, page 58 and 59 are literally just the super heavy rules for super heavy walkers, because that's what an Imperial Knight is. So, if you bought Escalation, joke's on you, asshole, because now you have these rules in two places. So we can skip out those rules. You then have one page that talks about Imperial Knight detachments, and half of that page is literally a picture of a Force Orc.
That's right.
You have one page that has the Allies Matrix, so it talks about which armies can take an Imperial Knight, and the only thing that makes no sense to me is why Chaos can't. Because have we not been beaten over the head with all of the 40k fluff about how all humans can fall to Chaos?
Right.
And that is Chaos. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, Chaos is alluring. It can affect anyone. That's why Inquisitors will vape entire planets. Oh yeah, there's 2 billion people that are completely unaware, but there's 1 billion people that worship Chaos. Kill them all.
Well, I think
Imperial Knights, you cannot spike sprue that shit up, because come the apocalypse, they would fight with Chaos. And I just found that really weird, because I can take Imperial Guard with Chaos, right? They're traitor guard. So like I said, that was the only one that made no sense. Otherwise, Necrons, Orcs, and Tyranids can't get them, because Tyranids are forever alone. You then have your two pages of what was available on the White Dwarf, and you actually only have one page. So you're right, this is three pages, because there are only three pages in here that are not somewhere else. And that's $50. And fuck you, Games Workshop, why? Like, I'm all for them adding things to the game. When they released a lot of the new fortifications, they included the rules in the kit, because these were cool kits that they made, and there were no rules for them anywhere else.
Right.
Why could they not have done that there? Why does Codex Imperial Knights exist? Why are you gouging people $50 for a Warlord trait table? Because it's literally the only thing in here.
And it's an obligatory Warlord trait table, by the way. It is not good. It is, yeah. Oh shit, a Warlord trait table.
Blah. Yeah, it says, in addition, they receive a Warlord trait rolled for on the table below.
Which is just, who cares? It just, there's nothing there. I had somebody say to me, you know, well, actually, you know, this one does need a codex because, you know, you can actually play this as a full army by itself. So if you were to show up to a tournament that allowed it, you would have to have your codex, just like you would normally have to have at a tournament.
But you couldn't.
You wouldn't be able
to print out in the box of every Imperial Knight.
Right. Well,
I mean, Staples would charge me 10 cents to print the amount of rules that they have included in this book.
Oh no, absolutely. But even for like that's the argument of just like, well, they are trying to gouge you, which I agree with. But even that rationale doesn't hold up, because you could play an all Inquisitor force using the rules that were in the data slate. Like, you would be able to, if you wanted to play an Inquisitor army, right? So you can't say that, oh, the only reason why this came out as a codex is because you can play it as its own army, because that's just not true. Wasn't that way with a couple other ones as well, I think.
Well, and that's exactly it. I'm going to call bullshit, because before Blood Angels got a codex, you had two issues of White Dwarf you had to buy. That's right. What did I say? I could buy these rules in White Dwarf. Before the Sisters Digital Codex, you had two issues of White Dwarf. That was your codex.
Yep.
When the Beasts of Chaos book came out, the Beastman book, it really invalidated a lot of the war. Actually, no, it was Demons of Chaos invalidated most of the Hordes of Chaos army book.
That's right.
They released the two-issue White Dwarf where they're like, yeah, this is what Warriors of Chaos are. By the way, in 6 months, you're getting your book. So, yeah, we know it's like eating a shit sandwich for now, but deal with it, because half a year. And all of those were all tournament legal. I mean, shit, I played in a fantasy tournament against the White Dwarf Chaos list because they didn't have a book before. Yet.
And so, I don't think anybody's going to stop somebody from playing in an event if they show up with an Imperial Knight in their list and they just have the White Dwarf with them. Nobody's going to be like, well, no, I mean, you know, you don't have the rules for the stomp that you can clearly read. You know, so, I mean,
yeah,
no.
Totally.
Like, nobody's going to do that.
You are 100% correct.
I know.
And that, well, no, but like I said, it just, this is a $50 price gouge. It really pisses me off that.
I'm not so pissed because I didn't buy it.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, technically I didn't buy it either, is I traded a model that had been sitting on my shelf for 5 years for it, so yay!
Bellacor.
Yeah.
But you could pay $8 for Bellacor's rules.
Hey-o.
Which would be fine, because that's actually a reasonable price tag.
That totally is. You know what? If they did release these two pages, or these three pages that were not in the White Dwarf as a digital download, shit, even if they released this as like a $17 cipher price gouge you digital download,
right,
totally fine.
Right.
I'm surprisingly okay with that. But for $50, I think that's what pisses me off. Because again, this is the smallest codex we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, when you flip through the fluff, starting on, I know you don't have the book, but starting on page 22, it turns into every page is 2/3 of a giant, like just
pictures.
Artwork. Yeah, it's a picture. So it's just like starting at page 22 and going all the way to page 37. So we have 15 pages. That's literally just pictures with 100 words on each page.
Yep.
And you're just like, come on, guys. You are charging money for this. First of all, charging any amount of money more than $15 is a ripoff, and you're charging $50. Like, it's ridiculous. Yep. And then you get the pictures that start on page 40 and go to 58. So, I mean, like, you cannot phone it in more than this codex was. And the fact that when Imperial Knights were announced, all the rules were in the White Dwarf. So I said the only thing that I do not have, because that household detachment rule was in the White Dwarf, is my Imperial Knights allies matrix. Because according to the White Dwarf, my Tyranids could take an Imperial Knight.
Yep.
Because it said any army could have a detachment. And I'm missing my Imperial Knight armies, two rules in a Warlord trait table. That's it. That's all. So that is $25 a page. Actually, you know what? That's not fair. White Dwarf costs $10, so that is $20 a page, because we'll just take the other 40.
All right, fair.
Put there.
Pocket that shit. All right, so let's talk about the rules themselves. Let's actually get into the meat of it. So off the top, I'll ask you this, Nathan. Do you like them?
Do I like them?
Yeah, do you like the rules?
No.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say their rules are bad. That's not to say anything bad about them, because I honestly feel that at their points cost and with their rules, they are not overpowered in the slightest. I feel like they are fairly balanced. There's going to be games where you feel like your Imperial Knight has won it for you because your stomp goes fucking insane and you kill tons of shit. There are going to be games where he dies like a chump because you run into like the Tau gun line that splits broadsides across and just tear him apart.
Just gauze him to pieces.
So, oh, yeah, God, Necrons are going to laugh anytime they see an Imperial Knight. So it's not that their rules are bad. I just feel like their rules are unnecessary. There is nothing the Imperial Knight does that a Lord of War out of Escalation cannot do for these points, because we're talking sub 400. And the fact that Lords of War and Escalation is part of 40K. Like, that's why I'm just like, no, I don't really care for these rules. They're not bad. They're not great. They're not bad. But they're unnecessary. And I think that's where, that's, again, something that rubs me the wrong way.
I have to disagree, but only I have to disagree for fun. That's it. For fun. I think that...
Because we've been agreeing too much this episode.
Well, that's mostly it. But no, I mean, really, what I mean by that is that I think that this is a very cool thing to add into your list. I don't think anybody's going to call you an idiot for putting one in there. And I think that if you are trying to do something different, like something different from the norm, it's absolutely a fun way to go. However, I don't necessarily like the rules for that reason. I like them if you're just playing an Imperial Knights list. Right? That's where I'm just like, actually, that seems like that would be a good time.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but see, you know, I don't even know if I agree with that.
They're all scoring, Nathan.
I know they're all scoring. I thought about that, but I mean, like, here's my thing. And I have to add, because, like, I really thought about it. And I was just like, fuck yeah, I can get this for Adepticon, bitches. That's only 3 models. I have an airbrush.
Easy, dude. Easy. No, and like, that's fucking one of those things, right?
Easy where it's, mode.
It's one of those things that I totally get it. Like, I get the ideas that they were going for, and I think that they hit them exactly where they needed to be. You know, Tom said the same thing. You were saying the same thing. They're not broken in any sense. They're actually pretty well balanced. The points cost is absolutely reasonable. Yes, they can be devastating, but they're just as vulnerable as any other vehicle out there. And they, you know, I mean, you anybody who plays 40K knows what vehicles are, right? We know how good they can be. We know how vulnerable they can be. We know they just pop turn one sometimes, right?
Yep.
It's just, it's one of those things. It's going to happen.
Well, that's exactly it. Is if I get an explodes, it's just D3 hull points.
That's
so
right.
If I get lucky, pop a pair of explodes on turn one, roll a 5 and a 6, things dead.
Bing, boom. Bang. Right? So, I mean, for the most part, I like it. I think that they, you know, when I first heard about it, I was sitting there worrying, oh my God, they're just going to feel like larger versions of, you know, the Baby Bjorn and the yep. Tau, Skip W, Swift, the Riptide, that's right. The Tau Riptide and stuff like that, where it would just, it would Knight, feel, blah, 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 blah. I'm sorry, what?
Wraith Knights, et cetera, et
exactly,
cetera.
Right? Like, you know, you see where I'm going. Like, it's one of those things that we're going to look at it and go, oh, but why would I take one compared to this, this, and this? You can do that here, but I think if what you're aiming for is specific to what this thing can do, I think it's a good option, right? But I think anybody mm-hmm. who's hardcore list building, no, they're not going to put them in there.
No.
They're not going to find a use.
Hardcore tournament players are going to leave it home because at 370 or 375 points, those are the only options you have because there are only two of them.
That's right.
You are sacrificing a ton. Like, in my Space Marine list, 375 points is my geared to the fucking nines captain with his full command squad with storm shields. And I'm like, hands down, they will do more work for me game after game than right. than Imperial Knight will. Honestly, I feel like your opinions and your feelings towards this is only because you haven't read Escalation. Have you? Have you read the Escalation?
I don't know why I would do that.
There you go. No, because, I mean, basically, like, the only difference between Escalation with Lords of War and the Imperial Knights is that I'm allowed one Lord of War, whereas this I can take 1 to 3
mm-hmm.
in addition to whatever it is. But I feel like Lords of War add more. Like, it has a better Warlord trait table that anyone can take. So it's just like, I have a Lord of War? Well, this is a Warlord trait table. Or I think it's if I play against, I can't remember. It's been a while and it's upstairs. But even then, there are other special rules. So it's just like, if you have a Lord of War and I don't, well, I actually get bonuses. And there are additional ways for me to score victory points. And I feel like the Escalation expansion adds in all of this extra stuff. And it allows you to pick one of these big heavy. So I can take a Baneblade with my Imperial Guard army. Because like I said to you, When I heard about Escalation, is I was just like, dude, that's like fucking Sabbat Martyr, fucking, right. You know, Traitor Guard right there, where I'm just like, you paint that shit lime green and we go to town. you know, but like I said, it's just, there are so many more fun things, and they can do everything that the Imperial Knights can do. So again, if you are looking for that one big, super heavy craziness that can add into your army and be fun and has a lot of other rules, I feel like Escalation provides that already. And that's why, again, when I look at these Imperial Knights, I'm like, sure, the models are nice. Let's not take that away from them. They're impressive. They're so big. And they're literally the best plastic kits Games Workshop's ever produced. Like, let's be honest. This model proves that they are the best at making plastic kits. That's totally fine. But this already exists in Escalation, which they released 4 months ago. So why are they selling me the same shit for $50? And this is way less, because at least in the Escalation book, I can look at it and just be like, you know what? My Iron Hands do need a Thunderhawk.
Right.
Because it has the rules for it, and it's hilarious.
Right. No, and I don't disagree on any particular point. It's just, you know, I think that from a funness perspective, this is a win. I like the rules. I like the model. I think it's very cleanly laid out. There's not a lot of confusion with it. There's not a lot of need for clarification. All right, so let's talk about the actual stat line here. Weapon skills 4, ballistic skill 4, strength 10, 13, 12, 12 for front, side, and rear armor. Initiative 4, 3 attacks, 6 hull points. I loved the idea that they felt like they needed two heavy stubbers. They're just like, listen, we're just, let's get them in there. Let's just, hey, let's hey, get hey. Them in there.
That's not fair, because that's only on the knight. The knight errant only has one heavy stubber.
Okay, fair, fair. But, you know, like, I had to giggle. Like, it was just like, really? We felt like we needed heavy stubbers, huh? All right, then. Heavy stubbers it is. I'm going to roll 6 dice for these. Why the fuck not? Let's do it. You know, like, I kind of giggle a little bit to see that kind of stuff. Rapid fire battle cannon on the paladin with the Reaper chainsword and the ion shield. So, you know, I think it's well armed. I'm very happy with the armaments that they gave it. I think the stat line being nothing as armor 14 is very. I was kind of interested to. I don't know. I was very interested to see that it had a lower rear. You know, like when I first heard about the model, I was half expecting it to just be armor 13 all around.
Yeah.
Like, why would a walker have worse rear armor?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be literally like walking through the enemy lines. Like, you know, it just seemed kind of silly.
It really doesn't make a lot of sense in that respect. But you know what? I feel like it is really well balanced.
They should do front, side, rear, and undercarriage.
Like, well, everything's shooting at its cock. So
okay, I mean, so can we all agree, gentleman's rule, if your models are beneath it, that it's armor 10? Can we just agree? Or armor 9? Yeah.
Armor 9 if you're between the legs pointed up. I mean, let's be honest.
But you have to survive a stomp.
Robo dicks are a weak point.
You have to survive a stomp.
But I was gonna say you need the robo dicks so that way you can like fuck any gargantuan creatures you come across. It's just a fact. I mean, let's be honest. One of the warlord traits is literally called Master of the Joust, and it's not like they have a lance anywhere else.
Ayo.
Looking at all gonna be good ones.
You should paint this thing up like the fruit fucker.
You absolutely should.
Just put a little scoop right down there. Just turn the little crotch plate out. Fruit fucker it is.
Someone needs to make that happen. It needs to happen. But anyway, the only other things is both of the knights have all the same special rules, which is Fear, Hammer of Wrath, Invincible Behemoth, which is covered with all of the whole super heavy walker rules,
right.
Move through cover, relentless smash, and strike down. But then it all has an ion shield, and maybe it's all of the Firestorm Armada I play, yeah. But I really hate the way the ion shield works.
I don't like it.
Basically, you get to pick one of your 4 facings, and you get a 4+ invulnerable towards that facing, and you declare it at the beginning of your opponent's shooting phase. And like I said, realistically, I was just like, but that's just sector shielding for idiots. Which is why I hate it, because, like, if I outmaneuver you and I jump in and I get behind you and you didn't see it coming, you're just like, oh, well, it's a good thing my ion shield will bail me out this turn, and you just put it to the rear. You know, at least when you're playing a game that requires strategy, right. Like Firestorm, you have to declare it before you move the model, so if you fuck up your movement, you are fucked.
Right. Well, and I don't particularly like it because, again, when I look at this model, it's hard for me to really see facings. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not boxy like a dreadnought or a tank or something like that. And so for this, I'm just kind of like, yeah, but that arm could just get blown off from the side. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. You know, it's skinny bits are not no more armored on the front than they are on the rear. You know, like, yep. It seems like a very silly choice to me. And the fact that you have to choose a facing for the ion shield seems like just kind of a waste of time. Like, if you excuse me, still getting over being sick. If you at least gave the option for, like, hey, 4+ on a facing, but if you just don't give a fuck about that kind of stupid shit, just 5+ all around. 5+ all around. Like, why isn't that an option? I don't get it. And that really bugs me. That it's got shields, but it's got shields that it has to turn. So, yes. You know, I absolutely see a lot of people just doing it turn 1 and turn 2 and then just – or just putting it down and never moving it and just being like, it's always the front.
What bugs me about it is the fact that it happens in my shooting phase.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, like, you know, surprise attack. My dreadnought with a multi-melta comes down in his drop pod. He jumps out behind you. Perfect shot lined up and you're just like, rear facing. I'll eat your crack rockets on my armor 13.
That's why you need
fuck off.
Two drop pods with multi-meltas.
You know, but you know, right? But like that's really all that lazy rule does. Is it just like it allows you to fuck up. You know, as the person with the Night Titan, you're just like, wow, you did something unexpected. You completely outmaneuvered me. Good thing the rule gives me a crutch, and off you go. Right. And I think, like, if, you know, if I had to declare it the turn I moved, like, when I moved it, suddenly, that becomes a far more interesting rule. And especially, like you said, if it was 5+ everywhere, or you can boost it to 4+ and 1 facing in your movement phase, suddenly, that's an interesting rule.
Right.
Because now you're giving people options. How many people are just going to keep the 5+ all the time? Do I anticipate how you're going to move? Like I said, it just, the Ion Shield rule, as it's written right now, feels really lazy. It's a get out of jail free card. Right. And that's kind of why I hate it. So the other knight is the Knight Errant. And instead of the rapid fire battle cannon, which is by far the most hilarious option, take that one. You get a strength 9 AP 1 heavy 1 large blast melta gun.
Yeah.
Which again, kind of funny, but not nearly as good as a 6-foot range double shot or like battle cannon.
Oh yeah, no, you go with the battle cannon. I mean, the Knight Errant, what I find very silly about it is that it required 2 unit entries. You know what I mean?
Like, but look, even Games Workshop realizes the word count was so fucking outrageously low that they reprinted the Ion Shield rule. Now, every other codex you get, let's say you
noticed that
unit
too.
Entry where they're just like, witches have this rule, and then you get to a special character with witch weapon with witch rules, they're like, this rule, see page, blah blah blah. But even Games Workshop realized that for $50 this word count was hilariously low. So despite these pages being literally the spread, so I'm looking at both of them with the book open, I don't even have to flip a page. They reprint it in its entirety.
Well, it says Imperial Knight, right? Like, so it's still sane, right? Like, they're saying it's an Imperial Knight. We're not saying which Imperial Knight, just the Imperial Knight. You know what I mean? As opposed to saying Paladin or Knight Errant. But yeah, it's just a reprint. So,
And like I said, this is the only Codex Games Workshop has ever done that on, and I would like to feel like it's because whoever was tasked with writing this felt guilty. Like, they felt guilty over how much Games Workshop was fucking you in the ass for this $50 codex. Right. So let's talk about the Imperial Knight Armies, one page, the only reason to ever buy this book.
Yes, that's correct. Talk.
All right, so there are 3 rules here. One is the Knight Armies rule. So it says that you may take an army where the primary detachment is made up of 3 to 6 Imperial Knights. If you do so, then the detachment must include a Knight Warlord, which is the Warlord trait table, and other detachments such as additional primary, allied, or fortifications can be taken normally. In an Imperial Knight army, all knights are scoring units. So, hooray, your 4 model army scores.
Well, hold on. Save that for the list building section.
Okay, I'm sorry.
God damn it. All right, well, now that you've fucking given it all away, let's move on to our list building section. We're building for 1,500 points.
Okay.
I took 4 Paladin Knights, and I feel like it's a really strong list. You know, I feel like the first Paladin Knight, you know, does what a Paladin Knight should be doing. I feel like the other 2 are supporting. And I feel like the last one's the Warlord, right? So, you know, like the combos and so forth.
Yeah, all the combos. See, it's
funny. Nathan, what's your list?
See, I actually went with 3 Knight Paladins with 1 Knight Errant because I was just like, what am I going to do when a Land Raider gets within 1.5 feet of me? Shabam! Large Blast template it. And I was like, bam. You know, you can't coach that. Ugh.
This is a crane.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's exactly it. Is like, whereas yours, I mean, you know, I feel like your list is really good, but you're really relying on close combat.
Well, I'm very tight on the points. I'm very tight. There's no room for error there. It's exactly 1,500.
Yeah, totally. I mean, at least mine is 1,495.
Yeah, you've got room for upgrades.
I do have room for the upgrades that don't exist, which that's is right. kind of cool. But yeah, like I said, it just, you know, it's one of those things that I was like, you know what, I think a Melta blast template is exactly what
it's a cultural victory. You give up less points.
Yeah. Oh my god. But yes, holy crap, are all of these all Imperial Knight armies going to look the same? I don't know. I don't actually think you're going to see a lot of people take full Imperial Knight armies simply because of the fact that it kind of robs 40K of everything that is 40K.
Like Ravenwing armies. You're not going to see a lot of them.
It's true. You might see that one guy.
There's always somebody who does it, and everybody goes, yeah.
I guess.
Usually painted poorly.
Well, of course it will be. But anyway, so like I said, that's Knight armies. Then you have, like I said, the one other rule, and this one I hate, because it says knightly ranks. And the reason I hate this is it is actually a voluntary special rule. So this would be like saying that Tyranid players can choose to ignore Synapse and just play their army as is. You know, but because basically what it is, it says players that want to include Knights Apparent or Seneschals in their games must roll a dice for each of their knights. So this is a voluntary rule. I can choose not to play it, in which case I'm only playing what is presented to me on the previous page, the Knight Paladin or the Knight Errant.
That's right.
Except my Knight Warlord automatically gets the freebie good one.
That's right.
And when, you know, so basically for all four of the knights in your army, you roll a dice on a 1. You subtract 1 from their weapon skill and ballistic skill, so those drop to 3. And his Ion Shield is only a 5 plus invul instead of a 4. On a 2 to a 5, he's exactly the same. And on a 6, you add 1 to his weapon skill and ballistic skill, and since they're all blast weapons, who fucking cares about anything? I mean, actually, his heavy stubbers are doing work at ballistic skill 5.
That's fair. That is fair. They are getting it done.
They're doing work. And then his Ion Shield confers a 3 plus instead of a 4 plus. But what pisses me off is the fact that it's a voluntary rule. Why wouldn't they just say, look, if you're the one person who's functionally retarded and playing this as an Imperial Knight army with nothing else, you have no allies, no data slates, nothing, you have to do this because there's only a 1 in 6 chance that it's bad for you.
I think so what bugged me
cares.
I think what bugged me about it was that not that it's a 1 in 6 chance, it's that it's a lazy rule. Not that it's optional. It comes across as being something where they're just like, fuck, we really need to just mix this up a little bit.
No, you know what it is? They come up with Knight armies. They came up with the Warlord trait table. They tried their best to adjust the fonts to fill the page. Because, I mean, we even have a picture on this page, okay? So they did not have enough content to fill one standard page with their Knight armies rule and their Warlord trait rule and a picture that they're just like, shit, we need something.
I don't think it's that, though. I think it's just, it's not phoning it in, but it's laziness. Because if you give it even an ounce of additional thought, right, how could we make this better? All you have to say is, right, listen, if you're playing an all-night army, you have these two additional unit options. This one is 15 points cheaper, but here's what it does. This one's 15 points more expensive or 25 points more expensive. Here's what it does. And then they're just like, and your warlord has to be the big one. You know what I mean?
Have to pay plus 50 points because he's your warlord.
Right, exactly, right? Like, it's not like that would have taken more than like 3 or 4 additional lines to say, here's the additional points cost, here's what it does. You have to take this, but if you want, you can make these all some such however many points cheaper, right? And then you can fudge it or you can try to mix stuff in or whatever the hell you want to do. I think that would have been so much better because at least then you would have something resembling a list building process, right? Where you would have options and you would be able to play with it a little bit just saying, how many can I fit into this points cost? Is it worth it? No.
Well, and that's exactly it. Is like for me, if I was going to take 1850, I could fit five knights if they were all knights errant, because you have to shave the 5 points. Or I could take four knights of however the fuck I want to do it. But I think you're right. If you said, look, a knight apparent, because his ion shield, his weapon skill, his ballistic skill is worth, he's 50 points cheaper, but a seneschal is 50 points more expensive, that actually does give the player the opportunity to really build his list. So at 1,500 points, am I going to take my four knights, or am I going to take three seneschals? And literally play 100 and some odd points down. You know, and yeah, I agree with you. I think that that would be a fantastic rule instead of this lazy ass. If you happen to feel like you want to use it this time, then you could maybe roll on this table if you feel like it. But don't worry about it. If you don't feel like it, that's fine. That's fine. You don't have to do it. You can just take your one warlord. He's better automatically.
Let's just burn through these warlord traits. So Nathan,
all terrible.
Start from the top.
All right, Master of the Hunt. The Knight Warlord and all friendly Imperial Knights within 12 inches of him add 1 to the result when rolling the distance they run or their charge range. Because God knows I don't want to be shooting my twin-linked battle cannon.
No, I'm going to run every turn.
Woo!
That's right, man. I'm going to build this with too close combat.
I can't. You have literally no
options.
There
are no upgrades.
Okay, you have no options, no upgrades. This isn't the Hellbrute. Back the fuck up. Fearsome Reputation. Enemy units within 12 inches of the Knight Warlord must use their lowest leadership value, not the highest. This is 40k. Leadership doesn't matter.
No, leadership is pointless.
Master of the Joust. The Knight Warlord rerolls failed to hit rolls in any assault phase in which he successfully charges into close combat. Those three attacks.
Dang, four attacks on the charge, sucker.
Doing work for you.
Four attacks on the charge, dude. Four attacks on the charge.
Oh, you're right, because I wouldn't get it if I don't charge. Bam, that is like, I am hitting twice against Marines.
For real.
Let's get this job done. Oh, three times with that reroll. Fuck, that is worth it.
Dude, you're in it.
Master of the Field. The Knight Warlord and up to D3 friendly Imperial Knights of the Outflank special rule. What makes this ridiculous is the fact that in 6th edition 40k, if there's ever a point in time that I have zero models on the table, I lose. So I can't outflank my entire force.
That's right.
Even if I roll the big five and I get four Imperial Knights, if I choose to outflank it, turn one comes to an end, I auto lose.
That's right.
So this is a terrible, terrible idea. Now, if I, you know, if I put just one guy on, again, you're saying, can you not kill six hull points in a single turn? So like I said, it's one of those things where you're like, why would I ever use this ever? And the answer is you wouldn't. Master of Siege, the Knight Warlord and all friendly Imperial Knights within 12 inches of him add 1 to rolls they make on the building damage table. Well, that one's just worth it. I mean, we all know that everyone just bunkers in a building instead of behind their Aegis defense line.
That's right.
And Indomitable, the Knight Warlord has the It Will Not Die special rule, and this is legitimately the only good.
That's right.
Warlord trait there is. So if you play an Imperial Knight army, you do not have the option of any of the rulebook warlord traits tables. You are fucked with taking this warlord trait table where all you're doing is hoping you roll a 6, because 1 through 5 are terrible.
Well, 1 through 5, you're basically just going to ignore them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You literally would not use it, because even if you got the Master of the Field with the outflank, you're still going to deploy all 4 of yours.
Right.
Because at least it's splitting your opponent's.
And if you got Master of the Hunt, you're never going to run. Who cares?
Yep.
Like, it's silly. And, it's lazy. And that's what bothers me so much about what's here. Okay, so overall feelings in general appear to be pretty negative. Other than the fact that it's a nice model, it's a gorgeous kit, and the rules are not broken.
I literally wish this was just a Lord of War.
It's just weird.
No, because, like, again, the Lord of War, the Escalation book, And calling this a Lord of War would work so well. Because it allows all of these other armies to take it. Because you could include the rules in the book, or you could say, buy the fucking White Dwarf.
Well, how many people do you think are just going to play as a Lord of War?
Well, they won't, because they're just going to... I think people, instead of playing it as a Lord of War, are just going to play it as the White Dwarf rules.
Oh, you know, right, yeah.
Sure, they'll follow the Imperial Knights allies matrix, so you're not going to see one in Chaos, Necrons, Orcs, or Tyranids. But they're just going to add one in and go to town using the White Dwarf rules, because there's no reason to not do it that way. You know, but again, even if all they did was release this amazing kit, release the fucking rules in the White Dwarf, and just say, this counts as a Lord of War. All of those rules exist in Escalation, so you're selling the Escalation book if people want the additional stuff. And it hits all of the bases. The only reason to do it this way, and that's, you know, is because when you take an Imperial Knight detachment, I can have 1-3, whereas Lords of War are 0-1.
Right.
And I think that's the only reason they made this decision, the only reason they chose to do it this way, is because of the fact that they are hoping people are going to buy 1-3. Because, like I said, when we talk about what does 375 points buy me, well, whoa, when you consider that to what does, like, 1150 points buy you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like I said, it's just, I can't see people in your typical tournament game, fuck tournament game, in your typical game, no one's going to take more than one.
No.
Even if you're in love with this model, even if you love the rules and the fact that they're not overpowered or underpowered, and they're, you know, really, I think these rules are just right. And when is the last time we've seen that in 40K? No one's taking more than one. Like, who could ever justify taking more than one Imperial Knight?
Well, yeah, it falls under that Inquisitor, you know, umbrella, where it's just like, oh yeah, the Inquisitor book, you know, so on and so forth. No, you just take one Inquisitor.
Totally, you're going
to take the one guy, you put him in the unit, you give him rad grenades, or you kit him out to be the nines or as a demon hunter.
Totally.
You know, like, that's all I see here. Is it? This is very much just like, no, you just take the one guy. Here's the rules for him. Bang. But I think, yeah, if you haven't purchased this book and you're thinking about it, don't absolutely do not either get the White Dwarf, or you're going to get the three pages, or you can fucking print them off a scan that somebody's going to have online.
Legitimately, you pick up the White Dwarf with the rules, because there's never a reason to play an Imperial Knight Codex. There's never a reason to play pure Imperial Knights.
Okay.
It's a waste of fucking time, which means you don't need the rules about Knights Apparent and Seneschals and Warlords and all of that bullshit. You don't need it. You know, as long as you're not trying to be, you know, be shenanigans with your knight and put it with an army that, like I said, you know you can't take it with, there's no reason to buy this book. So you pick up the fucking White Dwarf, you pick up this model, you build it, you paint it up, and you have fun, and you play it as if it is a Lord of War that doesn't give your opponents all of the bonuses. And I think that's the other thing that pisses me off, is if you took a Lord of War, I earn additional victory points for stripping hull points off of it. You know, I get bonuses to my Seize the Initiative role if you have a Lord of War and I don't. So there's all of these things that work better with an Imperial Knight being a Lord of War. And that's why, again, like, you look at this codex and you're just like, but why?
But if you play an all-knight list, they're all scoring. That's why. I don't know. It's fine. Again, like, that's the best I can say about it. It's fine. You know, like, there's dumb stuff in here. See, there's stuff that I really like in here. But all in all, I think the thing that...
It is fine, but this book is crap.
The biggest failure for me is the lack of upgrades. I really don't like the idea that they're just like, oh, yeah, no, there's two versions, and you're done. I think that, you know, we're talking that you don't even have vehicle upgrades in here. Right? And, like, there should just be basic vehicle lights. Why can't my fucking knight errant have a fucking spotlight?
Yes, spotlight.
You know what I mean? Like, why can't it have all of these things that vehicles can normally take? You know, it's just, there's very silly things there where it's like, even the most simple upgrades that you could throw in there, just vehicle upgrades, are just not there. They're just not available. And I think that that's very silly.
If this plastic kit were a Warlord Titan, as we talked about, or not a Warlord, a Warhound, as we talked about...
Yeah, when Warlord's the big one.
Yeah, the Warlord's the gigantic fucker. If this were a Warhound Titan, like we talked about when we did it for the model of the week,
right,
it would fit in as Lord of War, and everything would be better. Like, that's, again, like, everything about the Imperial Knights where I'm like, if you like the model, by all means, pick one up, add it to your army, you're not going to regret it. You really won't, because even then, at a 375 points, I mean, that's cheaper than 10 Terminators. Right? Yeah. You know, so you're just like, well, I guess I'll swap my Terminator unit out for an Imperial Knight because this model is fucking great. And you're like, yeah, I can't blame you.
You can't blame you. Rapid fire battle cannon? Go.
Go nuts.
Go, man.
Great. I mean, even I was like, does Adepticon allow this? Because that's less shit I have to paint.
Well, and yours would... I guess it wouldn't get that. Anyways. So, I think that brings us to the weekly listener poll question. I think the only question that I have in mind for you guys is, I don't know, like, I feel like every time I get to the weekly listener poll question, it's about, is this worth it? Or would you pay the money for this garbage? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back to that old well, that dried up well. You know what I mean?
Do you... Imperial Knights should be Lords of War.
I think that's a good one.
I think that's the better question, because I truly feel that making the Imperial Knight a Lord of War is better in every way than playing it in this sort of half-assed, it's sort of a Lord of War, it sort of isn't way.
All right, so that's the question we have for you guys. You can find that at GatorGamerCast.com. Should the Imperial Knight be a Lord of War? Hey, Nathan, something shiny. I got my broadcasting software working properly, finally.
Oh.
Yeah, I broadcasted the second episode of A Wolf Among Us, which had boobs in it, cartoon boobs.
Oh, were they at least nice cartoon
boobs? They were nice cartoon boobs, and it was the Little Mermaids.
That's makes me feel weird.
Yeah, for real. That was one of the things I said. It was like, man, a lot of fetishes just got friggin' validated just now. When she's like, some people used to call me the Little Mermaid. And you're like, oh my God. I did save it and highlight it on the Jada Gamercast Twitch page there. But hopefully we'll be doing a little bit more of that. We'll be doing some live stuff with you guys on Twitch. But they ran an update for the broadcasting software that I was using, and I was able to do some stuff with frames and things of that nature to make it look really nice. So, yeah, it actually worked out pretty good. I was pretty happy with it. Oh, my God. I hate being sick, except for the fact that I paint. I'll tell you this, though. I'm tired of blinging shit out. I didn't think I'd ever get there.
I'm tired of blinging shit?
Ooh. I'm tired of it, man. Like, the Works Raptor, I'm crawling through the last bit. I'll be very happy when they're done, but I'll never do another Works Raptor model.
That is crazy because, you know, honestly, Lysa, when you're playing Tom there with your that was also something for this week in hobby is we all played games. But anyway,
play games, yes.
When you were playing Tom there, I thought your assault carrier looked great. Thought it looked better than your frigates, because I thought that at least with the bigger model you had the
more
your Corvettes. You had more opportunity to really kind of showcase it, and I thought it looked really great. And it didn't look like it would be that bad to paint, but I guess because like it even looked easier than your Directorate in terms of how to apply the scheme, and it's not khaki.
It's not khaki. No. I think when you're painting four Corvettes or a single model, the scheme's fine. But when you got to crank out a unit of four that are basically almost the same size as the assault carrier per model, mm-hmm. it starts to crawl a little bit. And I think that's the only thing really slowing me up. But no, I'll be able to crank them out. I think they're all going to look nice when they're done. And I think especially the cruisers are gonna look really nice, which is what I'm pretty happy about right now. But mm-hmm. for the most part, yeah. Yes, I did play Tom. It was his first game of Firestorm Armada. I pantsed him, of course.
Well, yeah, because he was playing the, these are models I own, and you were playing the, this is the purely optimized list that I am planning to take to a tournament.
It wasn't purely optimized, it was just, you know.
Name one thing that you would do differently
to make
the list better.
I did honestly...
Because that list hits everything you needed to do.
I did honestly ponder taking out the assault carrier and the corvettes and taking the four-man unit of Works Raptor torpedo cruisers. But that's it. So it's still pretty brutal, I'm not going to lie. It is actually a very strong list. So, yeah. But no, I mean, you know, you got a chance to see it there. 800 feels very good. It doesn't feel small at all. It plays pretty fast and... You know, like you still end up using the board just like you would in a normal sized game. I just think what I find so interesting about it is that the point swings are so much more dramatic when your battle log is only 10, right?
Yes.
Like, I think as soon as you start talking about that 10-point battle log, it very quickly you're like, oh shit, I'm going to bottom out if I take this tack card back. Or, you know, I'm going to bottom out if I try to get my reinforcements in.
Well, you know, especially when you look at it, you're like, okay, so my heavy cruisers are beat up. And if I lose them, the tier one, so that's going to be -4. And if I pick this cat card, that's another -2. So if that happens this turn, holy shit, I lose. Okay, I'll leave the tack
card. Yeah, you got to leave that tack card behind. Especially if you end up playing a scenario that has reinforcements or like the way that I did in that game, put my cruisers on a flanking reserve. Because what I've learned is that my cruisers are great, but they are the only viable target turn one.
Your cruisers are a glass cannon, you know. And like you said, they are the only valuable target because you have two tier threes, which are small targets. So it's not like I want to take pot shots that hit on fives.
That's right.
And you have cloaked heavy cruisers, and I don't want to, again, split my dice in half. And
I've got a difficult target.
I've got five dice at range band 4, and that's 2. So I don't want to do that. Yeah. And your assault carrier is a small target.
Difficult target with stealth systems.
Inexplicably. Yeah. You know, so again, like you're right. Literally the only viable target that does not fuck over my chances of success on turn 1 and 2 before we've really closed and got into optimal range bands, I guess turn 1 for your Dendrenzi, because on turn 2 they're like 24 inches and they're loving it.
Yep.
Loving life. Is your cruisers. And I think that, you know, your flank deployment is totally the way to play them, even though you shouldn't have done it in an intro game for someone's first go. When you're like, well, ambush your gunships. No, that would be amazing, but it's a hard rule. But by the way, I'm totally coming up.
No, I wanted him to see what the flanking reserve rule looked like. Not like you would ever flanking reserve anything in Rothosa anyways.
No, I mean, everything's cloaked. Fuck your couch.
Pretty much. But yes, and then you played Dystopian Wars against Tom and proceeded to pants him as well.
Oh, I felt a little bit guilty with how well everything went. No, I mean, as you saw, my Chinese are, they're a heavy assault fleet, but like I get mountains and mountains of dice, but they're all conscripts, so I succeed on 5+ instead of 4+ like the rest of the game. And I was able to just kind of take him by surprise with a couple of Chinese-specific Mars and things. And yeah, I mean, but at the end of turn 2, I'd successfully got 70% because I prized a ship, a big ship. I prized a capital carrier. Class.
Yeah,
it was a carrier. I prized his big carrier, so.
And then that was that. But for me... One of the things that, we were saying while you guys were playing was I was just like, I don't know, this game might be growing on me, but I don't know. And even when I went back to the website and looked at all the models and tried to figure out, is there anything that's really speaking to me? There wasn't. Like, there's a couple where I was just like, I guess I'd play these.
Honestly, what it was, you know, for me, the reason I decided to get into Dystopian Wars was I think it was right after, like the day after Out of the Basement.
Right.
I was in Calgary, I was at the Century Box.
Yes.
And I was just looking at all their Dystopian War stuff, and I saw the Ottomans that I loved, and I also saw the Chinese Dreadnought, this gigantic, fucking massive floating fortress of, like, fucking dragon breath statues, and, like, I absolutely love the aesthetic of both of them. And one of the local gamers, Adam, who played both Firestorm and Dystopian it out of the basement, he's big into Dystopian Wars, and he posted a blog post that talked about how, in his opinion, Ottomans are fucking broken and dirty, which is why Ward plays them.
That's right.
Make no mistake about it.
Yes.
And that's why I was like, well, I guess I'll do Chinese. I love it. Like, I think it looks great. And there's the Dystopian Wars tournament next week at Imaginary Wars. So I was like, hey, you know what? No better time like the present. Like, I've got a month to paint 10 ships. Like, it's a Spartan game. It's not like this is crazy.
Everything paints fast.
And, you know, and I like the aesthetic of this fleet. So, yeah, I decided to take the plunge there. And I've been having a blast playing it. I feel like it is different enough from Firestorm to feel like a different game, even though the core rule set is very similar. So it's like, from playing Firestorm, I had 80% of a Dystopian down, but they still feel different enough that it's not like, hey, let's play spaceships and then not spaceships.
Well, I mean, when they get to version 2.2.0, I might be looking into it a little bit more. Like I said, I think I figured it out by the end of the game. What about it drew my attention? And it was the lack of flight stands. It was just the idea that everything was to scale. You know, like, this ship is the, you know, adequate size to this ship, not in the wide reaches of space. Everything is a pinprick and these are just representations on a hollow board. You know, like, I did kind of appreciate that, just the scale, and everything was just like, no, this is all one to one. Like, this is what you're looking at. And so I did think that that was pretty cool. All right. So that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.